My name is Rusty Mackey, and you're listening to The Art of Stability. Hello, friends. Today I'm talking with Andy Kolber, therapist and author of Try Softer, as well as her new book, Strong Like Water. Have you ever struggled to feel safe with people? Maybe you know others love you and that they're for you, yet you still can't shake feelings of insecurity around them. No matter how much you tell yourself what you know to be true, your experience seems to betray the truth. One of the most challenging relationships to experience this disconnect between what we know and what we feel is with God. What on earth do we do when we don't feel safe with Him? In today's conversation, Andy shares the importance of felt safety in life, especially in relationship to God. I think you're going to be encouraged by what she has to say and the compassion with which she says it. Stay with us and enjoy feeling safe with Andy Kolber. Andy, one of the things that I do at the beginning of each of my podcasts is share something that I appreciate about you. As I was thinking through this, the first thing that came to my mind was your writing. Try Softer was such a meaningful book to me. I know so many others that it was so meaningful to. And I thought, yes, I appreciate Andy's writing. But as I sat with that, I said, no, that's close, but that's not quite it. I think what I noticed was I really appreciate your voice as a writer and how your voice so embodies compassion. Just the way you say what you say, the things you say, you know, I just feel supported as I read your words. And so my question starting out today is, what's your story of becoming a more compassionate person?
Well, wow. Thank you so much. Just, I'm going to take a moment and just, whoop, that was beautiful. Thank you for saying that to me. Because I think, yeah, it's one thing. It's always feels good to have your work appreciated, but thank you for pulling on that thread of compassion. I think that is something that is a really important concept, and not just concept, but ultimately something I hope to embody. You know, I think part of what has cultivated the desire for that is having experienced many times where I didn't receive the compassion I needed. And, you know, that a lot is from a childhood that had some pretty significant unresolved trauma. I touch on that in Try Softer. I don't detail all of it, you know, and I do that for lots of different reasons, but I think partly I just want the readers to know that I get it. To even just have the snapshot of like, yep, I hear you. And I hear you as a therapist, but I also hear you as a person. And I've just seen so many places and times, partly as a person where compassion was needed and it wasn't present, but then as a professional.
Yeah.
The folks that I've worked with who've come to me, and not that I have always done things perfectly either. So I think there's room to acknowledge and room for growth. You know, it's really not about like you arrive, you know, but I think there is a posture that is involved with compassion. In Try Softer, I talk about it as compassionate attention. And in my book, my newer book, Strong Like Water, I talk about the concept of something called compassionate resourcing. And we can talk about that a little bit later, but it was important for me to even keep that posture because so many times people have the right ideas or the right facts or the right principles, but the ways that they are maybe trying to help others or even themselves is from a place of shame. It's a place of like, I need this to be over. I need to fix this. And often what happens is sometimes without even meaning to, we sort of sacrifice our own humanity and the humanity of others because the pain is difficult. And I think that's really worth honoring. But because of that, we so often want it to be over and we rush to fix, or we just really can't do it anymore. So we just fully check out, or we fully disengage. And so compassion for me, I mean, I don't think how you pronounce this, but, you know, in the Bible, the Hebrew word, for loving kindness is, I think it's hesed is, I think that's how you pronounce it. That is so powerful for me. Like that concept of seeing how much that's a part of God's character. And, you know, in my own journey, I was like, I've really come to internalize the belief that if that is God's posture towards me,
yes,
why would it not also be true that then I embody and sort of offer that to steward that to the parts of myself who are hurting, who are in pain. So that has been a huge part of my journey, is learning to internalize and embody compassion, knowing that it's not weak. And, you know, there's all this research that's coming out now, which I just love, to show us the ways that things like self-compassion and even compassion actually produces something stronger, something deeper and truer that we think often in our culture is presented as being a type of weakness. Yeah. And what we've come to really learn is that that makes us the most resilient.
Mm. That's so beautiful. All right, we can end the podcast now. Just kidding. We're just getting started. Oh, yeah. There's something very true to the idea that if we're being less compassionate to ourselves than Jesus, then that's not the voice of Jesus, right? There's something wrong there. And I just really, one thing that stood out to me that you said was this idea that we often dehumanize ourselves and others because we want to get out of the pain. And so it strikes me that there's something human in a fallen, broken world. There's something truly human about learning how to hold pain. Granted, there's something human about crying out, "How long, O Lord, when will this end?" But there's also something human about holding pain. And so I'm curious with just, okay, compassion was born for you out of the lack of it. Was there a moment or a season where you really experienced compassion that gave you the aha? Okay, I'm in pain, but aha, this is what I need.
Yeah. No, thanks for pulling that out, because yeah, I would almost say that's the second part. It's like, that was identifying the lack. So when I began to experience the glimmers of it, and you know, one of the things I sometimes talk about, I have been a follower of Jesus. Really, I cannot remember a time when Jesus was not a part of my experience, because it had been woven into my childhood quite a bit, which also makes it more confusing, right? Because it was also a traumatic childhood. So that's part of what made it so confusing, that that did not take away also the reality of experiencing trauma. And yet my faith has always been a resource, but in my journey, what I have come to now understand is that as much as I wanted to experience God completely as safe, I couldn't help but project my experiences of trauma and relationships onto God. And I think that's a very, I have lots of compassion for myself, because it neurobiologically, it makes complete sense. And when I was like, especially the first couple of years of my marriage to my husband, is when some things in me internally, those templates around relationship, I believe really that's when they really began to heal. And it was that experience that changed and shifted an embodied experience of safety with God in a way that, it's not to say I hadn't had glimpses, and this is always kind of confusing to share, because it's not that I didn't in some way, and mostly it's probably cognitively believe that God was safe, but it was neurobiologically, viscerally,
that's right,
as I experienced safety in relationship, in human relationship, that I could more deeply experience safety with God. And that thing, that idea, the safety is so tied to the compassion. because our bodies are wired, you know, things, concepts like there's polyvagal theory for folks who might be familiar. I talk a lot about like the window of tolerance, which is an important concept where, you know, essentially our body has a range of arousal where we can experience different emotions and feelings before we go into either like our sympathetic nervous system, which is fight or flight or fawn, or down into like a dissociation. And so essentially when our bodies feel unsafe, it doesn't matter what facts we know, our body's fight and defense responses are either turned on or going to be turned on like soon. Like we're kind of on that edge. And I spent a lot of my life. I mean, a lot. I'm like 22 years.
Yeah.
Maybe a little longer, maybe even 23, you know, like often just right on the edges all the time, if not out of my window, then on the edge of the window. Right. So safety for me, I could have been like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm safe. I had no concept of what that meant in my body. Mm-hmm. So it really was the experience of felt safety.
Yep.
That then allowed me to begin to embody compassion and internalize compassion. And those concepts are so tied together because compassion can be part of the bridge that allows people to begin to experience safety as well.
That's right.
Like when you experience someone that you're with, including God, as being compassionate, that is a way that our body then might interpret, hey, this actually is safe.
That's right.
So there's these beautiful threads. There is a tapestry that comes together. And so for me, it was first, it was like these micro moments and glimmers, and then it was longer. And then it was beginning to live from those places. Like, this isn't just like a fleeting moment. This is like, no, no, no. I am in my window. I am myself. I am safe. It is okay for me to be gentle with myself, even if other people don't like it, even if things are not completely finished, even if I'm still not perfect, which never will happen, right, on this earth. It was like this thing. It was this over time, this little by little transformation of embodying the safety, embodying the compassion began to bloom something in me. When I finally wrote Try Softer, you know, this is something I had really been living for a decade at that point. It was like in me, I was like, I can't help but tell people about this.
Yeah.
Why are we not talking? Like for me, I'm like, I'm a trauma therapist and people don't know. Why do we, I mean, and not to say that there aren't other resources. I don't want to say that there aren't, but by and large, particularly in Christian culture, I'm like, why are we not talking about this?
That's right.
And so I literally began writing that book during my son's nap times.
Wow.
And it, man, I cobbled that thing together because sometimes it'd be like 15 minutes, 20. And, you know, as the book got further along and different things, I definitely had to be with it for longer and work with it. But yeah, I mean, that is really where that was born.
I love that. And I think, you know, you mentioned this is not being talked about that much. And I think the way I hear folks talking about it in Christian circles is, I know this in my head, but I don't experience it in my heart, right? Or I know God is my refuge, place of safety, but why don't I feel like he's my refuge, right? And so I think your book and your work gives us a different way to talk about that, that actually can give us some tools to actually start taking some steps, as opposed to just kind of the open-ended question that so many live with. And I'm grateful for that. I'm glad you brought up window of tolerance, and hopefully that'll continue to be part of our conversation, which leads me to, and this might be part of it, would you mind sharing a story with us? I know you've already shared some, but would you mind sharing a story of a time of instability and what were some things that you did or maybe that God did for you to help you through that time?
One of the stories that comes to mind that I write about in Try Softer was we experienced, after my daughter was born, secondary infertility. And so we had quite a few just hurdles to conceiving my son, who's now six. But it was we had a bunch of different things going on. And finally, I did get pregnant. And then when we went to the first ultrasound, I was so excited because it had been like 2.5 years, and we didn't have great chances, basically. Like, we had been told by several medical professionals, like, we just didn't have a great chance of this happening there again. And so it was sort of like, oh my gosh, it's happening, you know? And when I went in, they couldn't find a heartbeat. And so that was, yeah, I mean, that was, I remember, you know, that sense of like, it just like, I, you know, from like a neurobiological perspective, like I think I began to sort of dissociate. I sort of felt like I was like looking at myself, and it just felt surreal. Like, I don't know, after everything, and now this is sort of how it felt, you know? Yeah. And then through that season, what was then especially difficult though, was that it was early enough that we didn't know for sure. So we like, if the baby, that there might be some hope. And that was the thing that was really painful, because it was like, maybe this could be still possible. And so it took about, it was almost like 5 weeks of going in and out, and like little bits of growth. And I'm taking care of our daughter, who is at this point like 3.5. And I mean, it was very, very difficult to parent, because I was just so heavy with just so much grief, and just so much like that sense of like dread, like, you know, that deep, deep heaviness. But I also, and this is something, yeah, like one of the things, so ultimately, the baby was, you know, not viable. And that was just, there was a lot of grief, and there was a lot of sadness. But in that process, there were two things that were really important. And one was that I experienced the presence of God, like, so profoundly. And I would go on these really long walks. And that has been a resource for me for a long time, to walk. And oftentimes I'll listen to music, or sometimes worship music, or various things. That's a really big resource for me. And then when I finally had to go in to have a DNC, and I was so proud of myself, because it was like all this work that I had done was like, in a way, I was seeing some fruit of it, because instead of being so hard on myself and feeling like I just had to like white knuckle it,
yeah,
I found a babysitter and I did all these things. Like the day before, actually, I went to a movie theater by myself and just watched. I literally went and saw like a funny movie, like by myself. This is not something I necessarily do a lot. Yeah. Like, I just was so kind to myself. The next day I had the procedure and made sure I had the space to be able to just be so gentle with myself as like through the process. And what was so meaningful about that is, it's not that the process wasn't so painful. I mean, it really was. I mean, but after, I mean, it was like a, you know, 6-7 week time that was just, it was brutal. It really was. But what I had learned was God's posture to me was more kind than I could have ever imagined, even. And I was invited to participate. And offer. Like, I was not just a standing on the sidelines person. It was like, come on in, Andy, the water's fine. You get to also be a part of this. Yeah. And that was so good and healing for me, because it was sometimes I think that there are parts of us that can receive kindness, both from God, from other people, but there are the parts that are too guarded, that are too afraid, that feel too unsafe. And it's not to say God can't also work with those parts, but I think this is where the skillfulness of learning to embody the compassion allows us to develop a listening ear. In the same way, like a parent might attune to one child a little differently than another child, I think that's a little bit how it is in our own self. Some parts of ourselves might need this, and some parts might need this. Yeah, and that's good. That's wisdom. It's not a blanket, like, here, everybody take this. It's the attunement to it. And so that experience was profoundly, like, and it wasn't like flipping a switch, but after about a month, I was really metabolizing the pain, really what I would say in the work that I do, moving through. Mm-hmm. And that did not become trauma for me. It was able to move all the way through, which I'm really, you know, I say that like that doesn't need to be a comparison point for anybody, because it's not about you did this good and you did this bad. But what was different for me was I learned that it is possible to go through a deeply painful experience and have it become part of the tapestry in a way that's different than trauma. And trauma can certainly, and does, like, we can move those things through as well. But to be in process with it and to learn that how we move through pain matters as much as the pain itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing such a personal story. I'm grateful for how God met you in it and how you were able to meet yourself in it. But yeah, thank you for sharing such a personal story. You know, it strikes me as you're sharing, if trauma is not what happens to us, but what happens in us is that lack of a compassionate witness. And I hear you saying there, you know, yes, it was painful. You know, 6-7 weeks of just pain and having to still live life. I mean, isn't that one of the hardest things? You know, you're parenting your daughter while you're praying and hoping and mourning the loss of another child. Like, oh, that's awful. And yet you're able to experience the compassionate witness, the compassionate presence of God. And I loved, 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 loved how you said, and God invited you to participate in that. And you know, we're in a moment where self-care is kind of a buzzword, mm-hmm. and some people react to it as selfish, but the way you described it sounds very God honoring. It sounds like, yeah, this is co-laboring with God in this process. And, you know, I'm curious with the window of tolerance idea that you shared earlier and how we can kind of go to the top end where we're anxious, we're overwhelmed, maybe we're furious. We can go to the bottom end where we're disassociating, we're depressed, we're experiencing shame, and really the need to get back in, you know, to upregulate ourselves, to downregulate ourselves.
Yes.
I heard in your story both moments of dissociation and moments where it was just like, this is too much and I'm overwhelmed, where you were on both ends. What would you say were some things? I know you mentioned going to the movies and going on walks. How would you describe some of the steps you took to co-labor with God in terms of upregulating and downregulating, just to help people get a better understanding of that concept?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think a lot of this is contextual for sure. And so I just say that because, again, it's like sort of like each nervous system's almost like the unique fingerprint of everybody's way they are made, you know? And so I say that because I think there are general things, and I talk about that in Try Softer, and I talk about it in Strong Like Water. Like, I'm really passionate about resourcing people because I want this to be more than a theoretical concept. That's the right. Embodied experience is the thing. You can know every fact that does not necessarily impact the lived experience of your body, you know?
Yeah.
So, but with that being said, you know, I think I'm so glad that you use the phrasing upregulate, downregulate, because it gives, that's a great clue in to what we might need. And this is why I love the window of tolerance, because it's sort of like, in a way, I think of it like a map, and everybody's body has a little bit of a different map, you know, but it's still, but there's commonalities. Yeah. And so typically like our bodies will, when we experience threat, our bodies will first go into that sympathetic response, which is generally speaking more associated with fight or flight. It could be fawn, which is essentially like hypervigilant, people pleasing. Like, I need you to be okay, so I'm okay. And yes. Like, I need to give you what you want because I'm afraid, kind of. And so those, what it's important to understand is that that is about mobilization. Mm. So our body, without even cognitively making a decision, and this is really important for folks to understand, because once we are outside of our window, the top part of our brain is offline. Yeah. So there's a range, and this is actually what I go into a lot in Strong Like Water. There's a range at the edge of the window of tolerance that I would call a blended state. The blended state is when we can sort of be a little bit in like sympathetic and a little bit in the window. Huh. This is a really important place because it's the time when we still have choices. So we can notice, like, I'm getting activated. I may be getting, you know, if folks are familiar with the terminology, like, I may be starting to become triggered. Like, if we can identify it when we still have access to the window, what that means is our prefrontal cortex is still at least partially online. The other resources we carry in our body are still available, at least in part. So the more we practice this work, it's sort of like a muscle. It gets stronger and easier to do. But in some cases, and this is where the wisdom of our body just honestly blows me away. The way God designed our body is, I could geek out literally for hours. But basically, the more intense the threat, the more significantly we will go outside the window. If something absolutely terrifying were to happen, and your body would immediately perceive fighting doesn't help, fleeing doesn't help, fawning's not going to help, you may even go to the point where you literally lose consciousness, because your body is essentially wired to do anything it can to help you survive. Yeah. So if our bodies perceive that fainting will keep us is the best chance of keeping us safe, then that is what will happen. And like, if you have a history where, like, for example, if you in childhood where you were sort of trapped, maybe you were a child in a home with adults who were really unsafe. It's very common for kids to dissociate because there's no way to get out. Fighting doesn't help. There's nowhere to flee to. There's nowhere. Fawning may not get you what you need. So I just share those first, just to kind of give us that big picture idea of this is what we're working with. And based off of your history and your story, your body is going to maybe go to different responses more quickly than others, because you've maybe learned that's what you need. Yeah. So often the work of healing is learning to first even notice. Like, you may not be able to change a thing yet, but you're just noticing, like, every time I come home and I see that the house is literally just absolutely looks like a bomb went off, like, my heart starts racing and I get sweaty and I feel like I want to run away, you know, like, maybe you can't do anything yet with that. But if we can notice that and we literally begin to honor it, okay, body, okay, you're telling me some information here. We can begin to get curious about that. And then as we get curious, we can build in resources. So like, for that person, like, let's say it's a mom or a dad getting home from work. And if it's possible, it might be like, I've got all this energy in my body. This is the mobilization, right? Your body's trying to mobilize. Mm-hmm. So that's a cue from our body. I need to move this. So maybe it's like, if you have a spouse, you know, you might say, or you have your kids, if it's possible, can you go on a 10 or 15 minute walk? Can you literally allow the energy to move through your body?
Mm-hmm.
In order to come back into that window.
Yeah.
Really strongly. Because once we do that, then we have the capacity of our full self.
That's right.
And sometimes I even say this is where we have the best potential to interface with God. Mm-hmm. Because when we are outside of our window, we are truly in our survival brain. Yeah. And it's not to say that God can't reach us there, but we are at like a very, very much, like we are not our full self. Like we are like that very low sort of survival brain. And that's about all we got at that point. Right. And then for some folks, maybe they see it, they get really, really anxious, and then they notice their body getting really heavy and they feel like super out of it. That's a cue we might be going to the lower part of the window of tolerance, because this happens when our body says, I have to conserve energy because this feels way too big. Mm-hmm. And in order to stay safe, I got to keep all the energy. So in cases like that, doing something like resting actually can be a little bit counterproductive. Like it's not that you don't want to rest, mm-hmm. but what you actually need in some to upregulate might be a little bit of movement. It might be some types of grounding that are more focused on bringing you into your physical body. Whereas the mobilization is it's like, I really need to move this energy through for the low part of the window of tolerance. It's actually like we want to actually activate some energy.
Yeah, infuse energy.
So we can move it through.
Yeah.
So all that to say there are several things that we can do with that, but that just gives us an idea of self-care is going to look a little different depending on the cue that our body gives us.
Yeah. So good. You know, as you're sharing this, I'm thinking of the psalmist who in different places is, you know, I've learned to calm and quiet my soul, you know, to down-regulate. Mm-hmm. And then at other places he's saying, arise my soul, you know, like, let's wake up, like, let's sing, let's dance, let's get moving. And it's just beautiful how, yes, the Lord has made us with these instinctual reactions, and he's given us even kind of some liturgies in the scripture. But I also really love how you point out that it's so customized, unique, specific. There are commonalities, but we all have unique stories, which impacts our window of tolerance. And I also love this idea as you're sharing that coping mechanisms, addictive behaviors, I mean, that's really like self-care gone awry. Right. I mean,
I have to tell you, that's literally how I define those things. And I actually think it's a very self-compassionate, it's a compassionate posture, because if we can understand that there is a need behind those behaviors,
the addiction. Yeah.
That's right. It's not to say, oh, good, like, yay, keep doing something that's harmful. But if we only try to manage the behavior, all that's going to happen is we are going to find another way.
That's right.
That's going to come out sideways just somewhere else. Just
exactly.
Sort of like pick your poison. Until we honor the truth and the reality of the need, that's not going anywhere.
That's right. Yeah. You have to put off the negative, harmful, but then you also have to put something else on. Right.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we can honor that while the behavior may not be ultimately what you want to continue, you can honor that the need is valid. The need for safety is valid. The need to be known is valid. The need for connection is valid. Those are not bad. Those are God-given. And when we honor the need, it opens up a spaciousness to say, you know, at the pace we can handle, what else is available to me?
That's right. That's right. It's beautiful. With that in mind of healthy self-care, healthy coping mechanisms, I'm curious, what are you enjoying with Jesus these days? Are there any practices that are helping you be with him in that felt sense way that you're talking about? Any practices that is just filling you up with joy and saying, yeah, I'm enjoying Jesus through this?
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that just continues to be really life-giving for me is honestly just like gentle movement is really important. Like I tend to pair that sometimes with sort of a guided meditation or music or even instrumental music. But there is a sense in which that for me are some of the most spiritual experiences that I have in my life. And oftentimes it's being outside as I do just to kind of witness. There is something about being in creation, about like all of those things together, like create a space in which it's like, I feel like I can have the, it's like it creates thin places for me to where I feel like I am experiencing God in ways that, you know, I do things like journal or, you know, read scripture. But the thing that for me just continues to be the most transformative is typically in those kinds of moments and experiences. So that has been really beautiful. And one of the prayers that I have come to say a lot in the last couple of years is, God, give me eyes to see the ways you're already here. I am not here to work for it. Like, I'm not here to work for you to be here. You're here. You're here. Help me have those eyes to see. That has been an important posture in my heart, because what it is I'm like, oh, it's you're there and you're there and you're there and you're there. And it opens my eyes to the glimmers. I'm like, oh, I see you there. Okay. I see, you know, I'm like, just the other day I had this important, what felt like this affirmation of something God, like just something I was chewing on as I was considering this new year. And I was not sure if I was going to go this way or this way. And I had just like multiple little affirmations and I was like, oh, okay, God. Okay. I hear you. I see you. And it was just, it was cool. It was just, it's been this beautiful thing of it's more like for me, what I find is that God has always been there. Mm-hmm. It's taking off what has kept me from seeing and seeing in the present the ways that God is here.
Mm. You're touching on something that I'm very passionate about. You know, you talked earlier about that paying attention to where we're at in our window of tolerance and paying attention to being in that fringe place. And then also, what does it look like to then pay attention to the Lord is here? You know, it's not that he's not. It's not that I have to do some kind of incantation to get him to come close to me. He is right here. The spirit, I mean, the scripture tells the spirit of God lives in us. Like he is here. As here as here can get. And okay, Lord, help me see, help me pay attention. Mm-hmm. And I love how practical what you shared was, because often we can think of that in terms of huge. And sometimes we do have really meaningful life-altering experiences with God. But the examples you gave were, oh, there's a little affirmation. There's a little affirmation. So I think my last question in light of that is, how would you encourage someone who is really desiring to just experience God's withness more, that he's with me? And they're on that journey where they're discovering, oh, it's not that I have to work. He's here. I just need to pay attention. What resources, maybe what's a tool or two that you would give that person to help them kind of strengthen that muscle, that attention muscle?
Yeah. I have a couple of thoughts. And the first is something I actually talk about in a little more in-depth way than I do in Try Softer, in Strong Like Water, is to help people assess what level of safety are they experiencing with God right now? And are they experiencing God as safe? And if they're not, to honor that, to like, it's not to force that, but to honor, like, this is just simply where we are, because I think God honors that. And there are, you know, some questions that help us to gently ask, like, if it feels good, if it feels like something someone wants to do, to begin to get curious about when in your life, where in your life, Have you experienced those moments, those glimmers? Because I think that's an important idea to come back to again, because it's like the finger, like your fingerprint is different than mine. And God's witness, the ways that you maybe perhaps have already experienced God's witness, I think is a really beautiful place to get curious about, even as a place of, you know, like the Israelites, the stones of remembrance. Like I talk about that concept a lot in my life, because when something I'm like, this is my Ebenezer, like I'm remembering this right now because I'm seeing you, God, in this, and I don't want to forget. You know, so if that's possible for someone, I think that can be really beautiful to just from a place, not of judgment, but of compassion and curiosity. I think another one, especially for folks who maybe they identify a little bit more with being in a place of survival mode, I want to honor that, because I think that shame can get piled up and then you're like, and I'm not even experiencing God. And I don't even have a spiritual practice. I think things can just pile up. And I think for me, a concept that continues to be so important is that concept of belovedness, of just like that receiving. It's almost like taking out the sacred secular idea. This is not about I need God to, I mean, not to say God couldn't do this, but I'm not going outside to create. I like that you say that this is not an incantation to bring about a spiritual experience. This is opening our eyes to what is. And here's the thing, is that God, I think creation is a place where, I mean, God is all over creation. And so even just literally to begin to just notice your moment to moment experience, can you go outside and would it feel okay for 2 minutes to notice the shape of the trees? What would that be like? And there's no pressure and you don't need to create anything, but what would you just notice in your body? And if there's peace, could we just honor that God made you to experience peace? And if you look at the clouds and you see the fullness of the clouds, would it be okay just for that moment to allow yourself to just experience that sense of even neutrality in that moment? And when you pick up a rock, could you just feel the weightiness of that rock and allow that to help you feel a little bit more anchored in the moment? And couldn't each of those things be a way that God is already loving you?
That's beautiful. Well, may this year for all of us be one where we can create that kind of spaciousness so that the Lord can create a spaciousness in us. Thank you so much for this conversation. Thank you for your work. Again, I'm so grateful for you personally and everything that you are contributing to the world, and more specifically, the way you are doing it. So thank you for who you are, and thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, friends, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Check out the show notes to find Andy on social media, and you're definitely going to want to order a copy of her new book today. Strong Like Water, Finding the Freedom, Safety, and Compassion to Move Through Hard Things and Experience True Flourishing. And hey, if you enjoyed this episode, would you consider sharing it with a friend or on social media so that more folks can enjoy it too? Your subscribes, likes, and shares are small ways to show big support for the podcast. The Art of Stability is a production of Steadfast Ministries that exists to help you stay grounded in Christ to lead with confidence and clarity. Head over to steadfastmin.com, that's steadfastmin.com, to see all the ways I help you do that. The cover art was created by Brian Bim, music created and performed by Rob Main, and the music was recorded and produced by the Asterisk Company. Thank you for joining me, and I'll see you next time on The Art of Stability.